Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. Now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
We're so glad that you're able to join us for this interview with Teresa Bonapartis of Lumina. Teresa and I became acquainted years ago as she reached out to me. We were doing a post-abortion healing conference in the Twin Cities area, and she reached out to me, and it's always been a source of deep... Oh, what should I say? I'm so grateful for Teresa's work. She also has written recently about late-term abortion and about people's reactions to women who have had abortion and even speaking about abortion publicly. So we thought it would be great to have Teresa come on the program and share some thoughts about this. Teresa, welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thanks, Kim. It's great to be back on with you.
And tell me, just give me a quick update, too, about what Lumina is up to these days. I know you have a new book that you've just published.
Yeah, I just had a book published that are meditations on post-abortion healing, and I just really try to focus on specific things that people that are going through healing really get caught up in and really address those in a very prayerful, spiritual way. So it's a book really to kind of take some place to be alone and just meditate with just dealing with certain issues. Just like, I mean, like right now it would just be the pain of the Christmas season for people that are post-abortive. It could be really painful. So just a little meditation maybe on how to look at it a different way so it's not as painful. And it really just goes through different things that they would face in their life, in their journey to healing.
Sure. And is that widely available, or how do we get
it? It actually is available from Marion Press in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and it just it's available for pre-order on Amazon.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But it's called The Journey to Healing.
The Journey to Healing. Okay. Well, Teresa, I wanted to talk with you. We reconnected over the piece that you wrote for The Federalist during the recent election cycle.
Yeah, my frustrating piece.
Well, and I mean, I was glad to see it because in the course of the debate, late-term abortion came up. And so tell us about the background of what you wrote for The Federalist to kind of set the stage for what happened next.
Well, I think that you know that I've done retreats just specifically for people who had abortions in late-term because they got adverse diagnosis. And I don't know, when I was watching the debate, I know that very many people were just really happy that Donald Trump, you know, obviously is saying that he would, you know, try to reverse Roe versus Wade and that abortion is wrong. But I always feel like, and I don't know if you feel this way, but I always feel like the missing link in many of these talks are the people that have actually had abortions, that nobody really addresses it. And I just really thought, so we had Hillary out there, who's obviously a pro-abortion extremist, but during the debate, she was talking to women who have had abortions, right? She was up there and she was saying women don't make this choice easily, and she was appealing to their humanness and speaking to them, but in ways that really weren't truthful for a lot of them, and what we've been told and what we've experienced. But still, she was non-judgmental when she was speaking to them. And when Donald Trump had an opportunity to speak, I mean, not that what he said wasn't good, but I just always feel like somebody needs to speak to the millions of people that are sitting on their couches that are suffering in silence because of abortion, and speak to their hearts, too, not just about the unborn babies, which, of course, we care about deeply, but also just to speak to those millions of women who are listening and, you know, probably voted for Hillary because maybe they feel judged by the pro-life movement, because nobody is really speaking to their hearts and the healing that they need. And so, I don't know, I just found it very frustrating because I feel like we always miss that opportunity. Like, who's sitting out there on those couches? You and I both know, Kim, there's millions of women sitting on their couches who still haven't told anyone, whose husbands don't know, who are suffering in silence, who maybe just have a couple of friends that they speak to, who haven't had healing, and they're just waiting. Even though they might not be realizing it, they're just waiting for an opportunity for someone to touch their hearts, for someone to say, yeah, we care about the unborn, but we care about you too. We know that you're suffering. We know that abortion isn't good for you. We know, you know, that you've been lied to. And we just don't ever do that. There's just like, it just, the curtain just drops before that all the time.
Sure. So let's underline that right now. If you are listening, I hope that you receive that Teresa has a compassionate response for your pain. I have a compassionate response for your pain. There are organizations all around this country, and since we stream on the internet everywhere in the world, there are organizations that will help you reconcile an abortion. And Teresa, you know, I think this is really something I also want to say, because when you said you have specific retreats for people who have medically advised abortions, late-term abortions, because of a fetal anomaly or a poor diagnosis. I have, in my experience, you have much more expertise than me, but in my experience of speaking with women who aborted at a doctor's advice, the guilt and grief is multiplied.
Well, you know what it is, too. You know, you're talking about people that had no intention of having an abortion, right? They were planning on having their children. Most of the time they find this out very, very late in their pregnancy. They go to the doctor. They're made to feel guilty for even considering having the baby. They're made to feel like the baby's going to be abused. If anything happens to them, it'll go into a home, and all these terrible things are going to happen, and that the compassionate right thing to do is to terminate the life of this baby. And also, there's a huge attempt to make the abortion seem like a normal death. You know, like many of these late-term abortionists will, you know, like George Tiller, who, you know, the abortionist who was murdered. He used to, I've seen the pictures, he used to dress the babies up and put them back in their mother's arms, baptize the babies. So there was an attempt to make something so evil and sinister appear, you know, like it was a normal death, and here's your baby, and hold your baby, and I'm going to baptize your baby, and then you're going to bury your baby. And many of these people also, what happens is they go and they bury these babies, and, you know, a lot of the families treat it like it's a regular funeral. And what ends up happening is a lot of these couples, they're over there thinking they're the ones that are crazy because they know it's anything but normal. They've just taken the life of their child. And so I think it takes a long time, though, for them, because the decision is made so quickly, because usually it's later term, like I said, and so they're told, you have to make this decision right away. And so a lot of times they do that. They don't really take the time to think about it, to do research. And unfortunately, many organizations that are out there that specifically help people that are going through this, like Be Not Afraid, you know, that's a great organization for people.
Isaiah's Promise. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. But many people don't know about those things. And so they're rushed into the decision. They go and they do this. And so it's almost like they're frozen, and it takes a while to thaw out. But when they do thaw out, they find out how they were lied to. They were betrayed maybe by, I know, clergy people that have told them it's okay to do it. They're betrayed by the doctors. They're like all these different things. And a lot of times they come to the realization that maybe their baby would have died, but at least they wouldn't have killed them. Do you know what I mean?
That is it. In a nutshell, I think that is the crux of what makes it so difficult to overcome emotionally and spiritually, because they feel as though, you know, all right, I'm sure losing a child cannot help but spark some sort of crisis of faith. You reexamine everything you believed about God, right, in a moment like that.
Sure.
And now if you're in that process and you're realizing, wait a minute, I played God, I took that life into my own hands, even at medical advice, what I see is people have no, they're not prepared for that, you know, that's what they're going to have to wrestle with. And
well, just like with a regular abortion, right? Nobody tells you the consequences when you have an abortion anyway, you know, right? It's still denied all the consequences that women feel. I know this one couple that that I worked with. I mean, it's just so sad because one day she said to me, like, She has many other children now, and she was really in a position in her ninth month where she was given an adverse diagnosis. Within 24 hours, they were on a plane to have the baby aborted because so much was dumped on them. They thought they almost felt like it was their only option. And she talks about how, first of all, when she saw her baby, looking down at it and thinking, oh, my gosh, it's just a baby. Do you know what I mean? But they made it sound so horrific. And when she finally saw it, even though it wasn't alive anymore, you know, that was her reaction. Oh, my gosh, it's just a baby. And then she always talks about how other people who have lost their children can do it in a way where they celebrate with little time they had with it or, you know, when it would have been born. And she doesn't feel like she has the right to do any of that because she participated in the death of her child. So, and like I said, and then there's the anger at clergy people, angry at doctors. There's just so many things that they have to work through to be able to find any kind of peace with this, in addition to having participated in the abortion. You know, it's crazy.
So, Teresa, it was a very well-done piece, and I really appreciated the way, you know, the tone that you struck and simply saying this was a missed opportunity from candidate Trump to candidate Clinton to address the people who don't know very much about this issue and as well as those impacted personally. Then the comment section on the Federalist website just blew up with vitriol and all sorts of accusations about what your purpose was.
Well, you know what it is when you think about it, you know, like even with the whole attempt to supposedly do away with the stigma of abortion, which they blame the stigma, the shame, and the guilt, they blame it on the pro-life movement instead of the reality of what abortion is. And it's the same thing with this article. Anything that's going to make anybody look at the truth of abortion and what it is. And you can look at that truth of abortion without judging the people that have had them, because I've been doing this work for over 25 years, and I can honestly say I've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and there are very few women who walk into an abortion clinic because they truly want to get an abortion. And so, you know, the women have been, you know, lied to and misinformed and bought into the lies, and so have the men. But there's such a reluctance to know the truth, to tell the truth, because abortion is an industry. And the people that are out there, if you don't have faith and you don't have any knowledge of healing, you have to keep justifying and you have to keep hiding and you have to have the attitude that some of those people that responded to me had, because otherwise you have to look, and it's just too terrifying to look if you don't feel like there's any hope of healing.
And you wrote a piece on your blog, which I really, you know, I shared that on Facebook, and I hope everyone has a chance to read it, pro-choice or not. You know, if you're already pro-life, please read it, because you'll understand what people go through when trying to share the truth about abortion. Your piece is called The Desperation to Keep Us Silent.
Right.
And I first experienced this, you know, Teresa, when I started sharing my testimony in 2001. I was very naive. My denial after abortion was so strong, I literally thought I was, you know, one of a handful of people who had had one. And it had been over 20 years since my abortion. And, you know, I was a local public personality on the radio. And when I came out with my story, you know, I hadn't even really become fully pro-life, if you can believe that. My main concern was not to protect unborn life. It was to help women recover from this, you know, experience.
Right.
It's a spiritual experience. And yet people immediately began accusing me of trying to take away women's rights, of trying to make women feel guilty, of trying to all sorts of, you know, things that I had nothing.
Well, isn't it, it's like so many other things that are going on nowadays. If you pin the labels on somebody, then they don't have to listen to the truth because you're keeping people away from them. It's like saying, you know, oh, if you go near this person, you're going to contract this disease, even though the person doesn't really have the disease. But it's serving its purpose in keeping people away from listening to the truth. And that's what they do, right?
It is what they do. And I think one of the points that you made is so important. I want to give you a chance to expand on this. You said, contrary to what pro-aborts may think, this is not a contest to see who can get more people on their side or about the loudest, be the loudest or bully the best. That's what happens online, whether it's social media, whether it's the comment section of a news website. That's what happens. It's like, and it's like abortion itself. Might makes right. You know, feminists have conceded that. Camille Paglia said, it's killing. It's the oppression of the weak by the strong. You know, and so I guess we shouldn't be surprised when they try to, you know, become louder, be more bullying. I think abortion is bullying. So say more about this, because the remedy and the difference between the loudness and the bullying is simply the truth, right?
Right. And I think that's really, and there's only one truth, right? And that's what was forgotten so many times. And I just think it's the reaching out to those people that are suffering. That's why I do this work, and I know that that's why you do this work. And it is, for me, it can be very frustrating on both sides of the aisle, because I feel like, you know, on one side, you know, a lot is said about the unborn, which, of course, again, I'm not saying that's not a good thing. It's a good thing. But there's not enough outreach, or there's still reluctance, or there is judgment, isn't there? Even with a lot of pro-life people, there's judgment, calling people that have had abortion murderers, and in a very negative way, you know, like just not offering the mercy and the forgiveness of God and calling them back to him in compassion so that they're healed and are able to look at what they did and heal and stuff. And then you have the other side who goes to the other extreme. So I always kind of feel like those of us who have been through healing and have really seen the truth and have been gifted with the grace of God to be able to work through our healing journeys, I always say that I feel like I'm stuck in the middle sometimes, because both extremes make me very, very uncomfortable. And my purpose in doing this work is just to let the people out there that are suffering know that healing is possible and that they don't have to live in that hell all their lives. And we both know what that hell is like, right, Kim? I mean, it's just a terrible place to be stuck in that unforgiveness and that self-condemnation and all the things that you have to deal with when you're healing from an abortion. That when you do finally get the healing, it's wanting, it's not the yelling, it's not the screaming, it's just wanting to let people know that there is a way, that you don't have to feel like that anymore, that you can be healed from your abortion, that you can have joy in your life again, that it doesn't have to dominate your life, that you can go on. You can enjoy things that you aren't able to enjoy anymore. You can have your life back again, and you could have reconciliation with yourself, with God, with your child. And that's the message that I want to get out there. And I've seen it over and over and over again with countless numbers of people who have come in for healing, that their whole lives have changed. And, you know, they're really able to have joy in their life again.
Praise God. I have, too, and I'm a living example of it.
And right?
Teresa Bonapartis is our guest, and she heads Lumina, and as she mentioned, they've been reaching out to people hurt by abortion for over 20 years, and she has a new volume out about this issue as well. We've got that linked at cradlemyheart.org, and I urge you to look for her resources, because she is a voice of truth on this issue. Teresa, one of the things that you and I are both interested in, and I think part of the reason why we get this backlash when we try to speak truth is because, you know, if you believe that abortion helps women, if you believe that you're compassionately euthanizing children that had no chance for quality of life, whatever the rhetoric is, right, then you can't leave the door open to the fact that some people are hurt by what you just promoted them doing. You know, so I mean, I think there's that's a big dynamic that's in play. But there's also, I think, a lot of, you know, reaction formation, what they call that defense mechanism, when people have had abortions and they don't want to look at it. And so they say, you stop trying to make me feel guilty. I think that goes on. And I see that in this case in France. I wanted to get your take on this. So France, to commemorate World Down Syndrome Day, produced a commercial. There was a group there that produced a commercial showing cheerful children with Down syndrome addressing a mother considering abortion. And the narration says, "Dear future mom, don't be afraid. You'll be able to do many things. He'll be able to hug you. He'll be able to run toward you. He'll be able to speak and tell you he loves you." Well, France's High Audiovisual Council, that sounds like something out of 1984, doesn't it?
Yes, really.
They removed the commercial from the air, earlier this year. And in November, the Council of State, the country's highest administrative court, upheld the ban. They said the clip would disturb the conscience of French women who have aborted Down syndrome fetuses.
Think about that. That is just such an insane thing when you think about it. So people that are facing this now aren't given the opportunity to see how Down syndrome children could be a blessing, because somebody might have aborted a Down syndrome baby in the past. Instead of offering those people healing and making them have, you know, go through a healing process themselves and helping other people to see the truth, this is what they're doing. They're making sure they double lock the truth, which is just so sad, because I know for me, like, my mom, her closest friend had a Down syndrome child, and I grew up with him, with Joey, and he was just, like, such a part of my life, and it was a joy to have him around, and when I think of how, you know, how many of them are aborted nowadays, if you really think about it, you don't see very many children with Down syndrome around anymore, because they are pressured to abort all the time, and the thought that a government would be so afraid to allow them to be born, or to, and you wonder, like, see, I know that they say it's what they said it was because they didn't want people to feel guilty, and I'm sure that's part of it, but there's another part of me that just feels like they don't want them to be born. It makes people uncomfortable, or I don't know. That, I did see that commercial. The commercial was beautiful, with those kids talking. I thought it was just such a beautiful commercial, and the fact that they would do that, it's just awful. It's awful. I mean, I don't even know what else to say about it.
Well, and George Will wrote an opinion piece for Washington Post, and I urge everybody listening to look this up. The headline says, "The Right to be Spared from Guilt." Oh,
yeah.
If we could only legislate that so that we could be free of our guilt because the law says so, right? But
yeah.
And I think he's the father of a Down syndrome son. And, the point that he makes is that this is the consequence of what's happening on campuses, where people believe we have a right to not be offended, or people believe
right.
We have a right to think a certain way or not.
And it's never going to work. That's the whole thing.
Of course.
They think it's going to work, but it's never going to work.
And
life has ups and downs. Life has challenges. There's things that you have to deal with, you know?
And here's the thing I want to say to everyone listening. I also have a family member who has Down syndrome, my brother-in-law, Brian. I'm his legal guardian and with my husband. And I'm co-guardian. Bruce does the yeoman share of all the work with Brian. Brian is 53 years old. He just turned 53 in September. And he has dementia as well as Down syndrome now. But here's the thing about Brian. He is a perfect mirror to my heart. Whatever objection I may have to Brian's personhood, the Lord will turn it back on me and he'll say, "Yes, Kim, I feel the same about you." I say, "He's so needy, Lord." He'll say, "You really are, Kim."
That's funny. That is funny.
I mean, God does not make mistakes. When he places people who are differently abled in our midst, he has a beautiful purpose for us.
Right,
as the ones
growing
who are
love, right?
Yes, who are charged with caring for them, but for them as well. They have a beautiful
mm-hmm.
purpose in life. And to me, it's so shocking that the people who are social justice warriors would think that it would be okay to eradicate those who are differently abled. Just amazing. Teresa, we've only got about 3 minutes left, and I want you to be able to share from your heart this idea about, let's pick up this theme, because one of the things you mentioned at the beginning was the difficulty of having an abortion in your past when the holidays roll around.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one of the things that I've done that can be very healing is to get a Christmas ornament in memory of that child. And every year when Christmas comes, a happy memory happens when that ornament comes out. It's a gesture of love toward the memory of the child. What are some things that people need to know when they're experiencing either an anniversary of the abortion or around the holidays, times that happen on the calendar that seem to randomly bring up the grief again?
Well, I think Christmas is a really huge, what I call an abortion connector. You know, it brings up so many different things, because when you think about it, Mary was a single mother. She said yes. We said no. He was born in poverty. Like, all of the different things that come around the birth of Christ. and also obviously the secular part of buying the toys for the kids. And so everything speaks to children around Christmas time, and also I think instills that guilt in even more so in people that have had abortions. And for me, I just find that, you know, you have to have a new way of looking at it. And instead of looking at it in the secular way with all of those things, for me, I started looking at it as, this is the day my salvation was born.
Teresa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you so much for all that you do.
All of the resources for Teresa's ministry are linked for you at cradlemyheart.org. Now stay with us. Coming up on Faith Radio, we'll open the phones for your calls and talk about some of the life stories in the news this week, too. Phones are open at 800-811-3003 at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us here tonight on Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Cotola, your host, and our phones are open for you at 800-811-3003. And we have a resource for you tonight, A Journey to Healing, Teresa Bonapartis's book, which is a great encouragement for those who suffer spiritually after abortion. Teresa's story is so uplifting, and the work that she's done over more than 20 years' time, 25 years' time, interacting with people who've been impacted by abortion personally, not just the men and women directly impacted by an abortion, but siblings, grandparents, concerned others. People can suffer after abortion because they drove a friend to the appointment or because they lent money to the cause. Years later, they can feel very guilty about not stepping up and saying, maybe there's a better solution for us here. And so Teresa knows that story from the inside out, and she's written about it in her new book, A Journey to Healing. And we have a copy for our first caller with a question or comment at 1-800-811-3003. Maybe you want to react to what Teresa was sharing, that when you stand up to say, you know what, abortion harms women, and here's how we know that that is so. Maybe you have faced a personal backlash, or maybe you just want to say, you know, gee, I didn't know that that was happening. I need to be more vocal in support of people who feel that they have been harmed by abortion. 1-800-811-3003. Would love to hear your voice. Of course, our ground rules are you do not have to give your name. You can always call anonymously, and we will protect your privacy. But would love to speak with you tonight here at 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. We can also talk about memorials and about how to not only handle the grief that comes at this time of year, but also how to, I don't want to say overcome, I'm not sure we ever overcome our grief, but how to be blessed by it. If that's not too great an expectation to put out there, the blessing of grief at the holidays is something I think we can talk about. And we didn't have time for Teresa to really flesh out her answer, but when she said that, you know, the Advent season means that our salvation has come. The Christmas season means we're saved. We have our Savior with us, Emmanuel, God with us. And that is, of course, such a cause for rejoicing and for celebration. And there can be ways that we can express that. And so let's talk about that, if you'd like to, at 1-800-811-3003. Phone lines are open, and again, tonight's pro-life resource is Teresa Bonapartis' book, A Journey to Healing. Teresa's writing this week, too, about a story that came up in the news that, boy, not too many people wanted to take on this story. And you can see why, because everybody in the mainstream press jumped on the story and gave it a lot of legs. The Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry published a story, a study that is, conducted by the University of California, San Francisco, which sought to prove that women are more emotionally stressed if denied an abortion initially than if they received one on request. So turning women away from abortion is what harms them emotionally, is what this study found. And boy, the New York Times and Time Magazine and, of course, the Huffington Post and Slate, all of these, Mother Jones, all of these mainstream to liberal media outlets jumped on this story and said, so there you go, abortion for everybody, because it doesn't harm women at all whatsoever. In fact, what you're doing by trying to put any sorts of limits to access is you're harming women by turning them away from the abortion that they're seeking to remove the emotional stress of an unwanted or unplanned pregnancy. And you really have to break this down to be able to comment on it. And I'm really grateful for Carol Novelli, who wrote a piece for Live Action News. We've got it posted at our Facebook page, which is at Cradle My Heart on Facebook. My handle on Twitter is at Kim Ketola, K-E-T-O-L-A. And I've got it linked there, too. And I really hope that you'll seek this story out and read it, because Carol has done a great job researching what this study is really about and, most importantly, where it is from. We've talked on Cradle My Heart Radio in the past about the problems with the research coming out of the University of California, San Francisco. The $88 million that Warren Buffett's foundation has spent funding abortion research at University of California, San Francisco in particular. He is a population control proponent. He is training the next generation of abortion doctors. And Warren Buffett is one of the biggest supporters, if not the biggest, supporter of abortion. He's very pro-abortion worldwide. Because of his financial clout, I doubt you could find anybody who's a bigger supporter of abortion than Warren Buffett. And when I tell you he has spent $88 million, this is not pro-life propaganda. This is, again, the New York Times and Mother Jones. ProPublica is a journalism nonprofit funded by the Hewlett Foundation. The Hewlett family, also extremely pro-choice, extremely in favor of abortion rights. But what's fascinating to me about this research now that's being published by the Journal of the American Medical Association, is that you've got some other big players here that are funding this research. And if you want to see how reliable the research is, or whether or not there's any ideology attached to it, what is the first rule of investigative reporting? Come on, you watch the detective shows. Follow the money, right? And so Carol Novelli has done a great job of parsing this out for us in her piece for Live Action News. And she finds not only, she mentions Warren Buffett, and she mentions the Mother Jones piece that came out about his deep, deep pockets, and how Warren Buffett-funded research was the homework that informed the justices in the Hellerstedt case that turned back Texas's pro-life legislation this summer. That was the Supreme Court justices who made that ruling relied on information bought and paid for by Warren Buffett. There's no such thing as neutral science anymore. Once you privatize science and you have someone who is ideologically fueled, funneling money to researchers, do you really believe the researchers are going to find something that's against their donors' beliefs? Maybe you do. I don't know. 1-800-811-3003. Let's talk about that. Maybe I'm just dead wrong on this. But as Carol Novelli points out in her piece for Live Action News, according to JAMA Psychiatry, the journal that published this, the most recent study was funded by the Wallace Alexander Gerbaud Foundation, which was mentioned last year by Inside Philanthropy as funding the next generation of abortion doctors. It was also funded by the David and Lucille Packard Foundation, which states on its website that it seeks to promote women's reproductive health and rights and to stabilize population growth. Now, their foundation is also a substantial donor to the nation's largest abortion chain, which is Planned Parenthood, as well as to the National Abortion Federation, as well as to the National Abortion Rights Action League. I don't know what they changed their acronym, but it's NARAL. It stands for something else. That's what the acronym stood for in the beginning. And here again, we see the Hewlett Foundation paying for this JAMA research that's just been published. The William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, which also gives millions upon millions to Planned Parenthood and its affiliates on a regular basis, as well as to the National Abortion Federation and NARAL. In addition to the funding given by the donors above, the study was also funded by an anonymous foundation. Time magazine failed to inquire or dig or speculate about that, give us any sort of answer as to whom that might have been. Another study published last year, carried out by researchers from the Bixby Center at UC San Francisco, attempted to disprove the claim that abortion causes women emotional harm, calling it inconclusive. Three of the six authors of that study were also authors in a journal called Contraception this year, and these authors were among faculty and staff of ANSR, Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health, ANSIRH, ANSR. Again, that's part of UC San Francisco's Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health. Time magazine reports this year's JAMA psychiatry study, part of an ongoing trial by ANSR called the Turnaway Study. Their authors have been involved in other similar studies and have also been involved with abortion organizations. Do I have to go on? Do you really believe that this is science in the public interest? Is it even plausible to think that they were going to find anything other than a finding that says abortion benefits women? Do you think that they could stand a crack of daylight that would say abortion is detrimental to women? And here's the main thing that I want you to see in all of this. You set aside everything that I've said and everything we've been talking about and consider for a moment that abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. That's the definition of abortion. It is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. Therefore, it is morally wrong, regardless of the impact of the procedure on the people who participate in it. It doesn't matter if women are harmed or not harmed. It doesn't matter if abortion providers think that they're benefiting women or not. It doesn't matter if the government decides to pay. There's a death involved, and it's morally wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. That's the truth that we have to look at, and that's a truth that we have to keep at the forefront of our minds when we think about this. And if you seriously believe that all of us can participate in the killing of an innocent human being without any emotional fallout, well, then I guess you don't need to think about this any further. What? Tell me your reaction. 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. And tonight's pro-life resource is A Journey to Healing by Teresa Bonapartis. And as I say that abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being, again, I have to return to Teresa's beautiful concept that Advent, this season, as we anticipate celebrating the birth of our Savior and His arrival to live among us on earth, is our season of hope because He came for that sin too. And I tell you that as one redeemed. And God is no respecter of persons. It's not what I did in accepting Christ's sacrifice for me, but it's what He did to pay for it in full for you and for me, regardless of what it is that we've done. 1-800-811-3003. 800-811-3003. Your phone call's coming up after this short break. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. Kim Cotola here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We are here for you at Cradle My Heart Radio. And let's go to the phones. We're talking about a couple of different topics, about some of the shame and stigma that women experience, not necessarily for having had an abortion, but for speaking out and saying that it wasn't a good experience, that it wasn't a good thing to have done. There can be a great deal of backlash that happens. Have you experienced that, or do you have a thought about that to share with us? Or maybe you want to share about the grief that comes at Advent and how we can overcome that grief. We can find the blessing in the midst of that grief as we think about what Christ has done for us in his coming. 800-811-3003. Let's go to the phones and welcome Amelia, who's listening on our Faith Radio affiliate in the Twin Cities. Amelia, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi there. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's on your mind tonight?
I just kind of wanted to share my story, and it was just based on kind of what I was listening to from you guys. I had a daughter when I was very young. I was in an abusive relationship, and at the time, abortion crossed my mind, and of course, that was a very emotional struggle for me. And I chose to have my daughter, and we're very happy. She's 7 now. These are all wonderful things, and I also had a friend around the same time when she was about a year old who said that she had had an abortion, and I didn't know, and she kind of opened up to me about her personal struggle with that action. But the main point that I want to make in listening to this program is that by taking away pro-choice initiative, we're really taking away from that struggle. What I want to say is that something that I really appreciated when I was 19 years old and caught in this relationship and I didn't know what to do. I had a very supportive family, but something that I appreciated most of all was feeling as though I had a choice to have this child or not. And I understand about truth. I understand the divinity of life, but something that has kind of bothered me about this conversation that has been had is the simple fact that if you take away that choice, it's going to make women feel more suppressed. It's going to make that you actually cited an article, which I had not heard about before, that the guilt regarding abortion is less than the guilt that happens if you don't have an abortion or something like that.
Right. It's abortion providers that are finding that in their research.
Right, right. And I understand that everybody has their bias, even perhaps you and me.
Sure.
So what I'm trying to say is that we all have our bias, and I don't feel like we are doing something good for humanity by literally prohibiting a safe measure. And
Amelia,
because there were so many times that I wanted to tell my friends that just, you know, having a baby would be the best thing for them.
Sure. And I don't think you heard me say that I'm in favor of making abortion illegal, because that's not what I do. That's not my that's not my emphasis, nor do I think that would be an answer. I think if it were to become illegal tomorrow, women would still be seeking it out because it would still present itself as an answer. But I have a question for you, and please don't consider this snarky, okay? Let's say
not at all.
Let's say you start a new relationship and you find a new partner who becomes physically violent. And the best way to protect yourself would be, if the law made it legal, for you to take the life of your child and to remove him from the picture because he's really the thing that enrages your new partner. Should that be something that we should give to women as a safety valve and as a choice and as something that would make their lives more empowered?
That is exactly what I was not addressing with my comment. My simple comment was just that.
Can you answer it, though? Can you answer it, Amelia? Can you answer my question?
Yes.
What would you advocate for that? Eliminating the child to address the violence in the relationship?
I would not advocate for that.
And why wouldn't you?
That I think is.
Why wouldn't you advocate? Why wouldn't you advocate for it in the case of a 2-year-old versus an unborn child?
I'm not sure what you're trying to ask me right now, because I would like to tell you my answer to your question. I'm just saying that when it comes to violent relationships, I know that some women use abortion to flee those relationships. That was not my choice, and I feel like my life is better for it. Like I said, I had a very supportive family.
Sure, and I applaud you for that. But the point that I was trying to press is that you would not advocate killing the 2-year-old because it's a human being. And the same is true for the child at 2 months gestation. You see, and so
I have not mentioned anything about 2-year-olds during this conversation.
Right, but I'm telling you, but you're trying to avoid the fact that a 2-year-old is morally the same as a 2-month-old in utero. You're trying to avoid that reality.
That is exactly what I'm not avoiding. I'm merely talking about the fact that there are pro-lifers in this world. And you also talked about the dichotomy of the extremists on both sides. And I do get frustrated with liberals on the extremist side of pro-life. And I do, or pro-choice, excuse me. And I do get frustrated with the extremists of the conservatives on the pro-life side. All I'm pointing out is that by rolling back these legislations that do protect different women, we are protecting a life that is here for, say, 15 to 25 years. This is probably the time period of people's lives where most people have abortions. And I'm not trying to take anything away from what you're saying. I really just wanted to make sure that my perspective was heard in this particular conversation, because having the choice to have my daughter or not was empowering to me.
And I applaud your choice. And it was a brave choice. And the problem of violence is a separate problem that, you know, I really applaud you. Finding your way through one of the most difficult things women face. And so I don't in any way mean to diminish your experience or to disrespect you, Amelia. But what I want you to see, and impressing you, because it took me a long time to see it and I needed to be pressed. What I want you to see is I think you've got a disconnect there in valuing the life of people who are born over the lives of people not yet born. And really, morally, there is no difference. Life begins at conception. You know, from conception forward, it's a distinct, living, and whole human being. And, you know,
I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying. I just merely wanted to point out that I think that
how can it be right to say that women should have a choice to destroy that life? How can that be morally right, Amelia?
Because it is empowering to women today.
Thank you.
It is empowering to those that believe in God and believe in a higher purpose for their lives. Because it is empowering to those of us who have experienced struggle in our lives. And I'm not trying to discount the struggle of those that have abortions. I'm sure that my struggle would be quite similar if I had had an abortion or had my daughter. All I'm trying to point out is, but I think you're kind of missing the middle line here, the fairest middle line. I think that's wonderful if we can have counselors in abortion clinics, and if we can really, you know, flesh out these different struggles that women have at a young age, so that way more women do feel comfortable with having children at a young age, and they feel comfortable even if they don't have a support system.
Okay, and listen, thank you so much.
What I think is missing right now from this perspective
is that
middle point.
We're out of time. Thank you. But hold on the line. Stay on the line, because we want to get that resource into your hands. And I really do thank you for calling, for thinking it through with us, and for, you know, putting your story on the line, Amelia. Thank you so much for being part of the program tonight. I will close by saying this. Abortion does not empower those who have to live in the aftermath of knowing that they put their own future in front of the future of a defenseless human being, their own child. It's a tantalizing prospect that we could be empowered and work our way out of the whatever difficulty we find ourselves in as a result of that pregnancy or leading up to the pregnancy. But I have to respectfully disagree. Women need to be empowered. I don't disagree about that. But what truly empowers us is sacrifice, service, doing the right thing and rising above our circumstances in a way that doesn't destroy another life in the bargain. I hope you'll keep listening, and I hope you'll join us again next week. We'll have an encore performance with Reverend Jim Lamb from Lutherans for Life, helping us understand Jesus the zygote, back to this very beginning of the life of our Lord and Savior. Thank you so much for being part of the broadcast tonight. Join us again next week, and remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.